What the Health with George Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning and welcome to What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, George Bertineau. Welcome back to all you regular listeners. And if you're new around here, then here's some information about myself. I'm an online health and fitness expert. I have a BSc in sports rehabilitation and I'm a former head of medical and performance in professional football. I've been a health and fitness expert for over a decade and I've been helping real people feel better, move smarter and get incredible results. If you are sick of dodgy influencers, people with amazing genetics giving you health advice online or potentially conflicting information, then you are in the right place. Because every week I help you cut through the confusion of the internet, we discuss relevant topics and I help you bring clarity on these topics so that you can make better decisions in your own health and fitness journey. Each week I'll be joined by expert guests as we dissect trends and we bust myths. Now, coming up first, we're going to be joined by Zoe Griffiths. But there is a recent report that reveals more people are turning to TikTok, Instagram, influencers and even ChatGPT for guidance, while only one in five people speak to qualified healthcare professionals. Zoe, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you.
Good, good. Sorry, I want to just double check. Did I pronounce your surname incorrectly?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay, perfect. Griffiths. Yes, yeah. Griffiths, perfect. That's fine. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. Right, so we're just going to jump straight into this because I know we're going to be a little bit short on time and this is a super interesting topic. So, straight up, why do you think social media is now the leading source of information on weight loss, overtaking the NHS?
Well, the Newman State of Obesity report that we're releasing today showed actually lots of trends and changes in perceptions around obesity. And so one of the areas we looked at was where people find information around obesity management medications. And as you said, there's been this surge and increase in people getting their advice or information or inspiration around these medications from non-clinical spaces. Mm-hmm. And so I think in part that reflects how many people consume and digest their general information too. You know, there's an overall trend for an increase in use of social media and use of AI-based tools. But I think for us, this was particularly concerning because this means that many people are getting advice from sources that are not necessarily trusted or evidence-based or mm-hmm. even regulated to be providing advice, information around these prescription-only medications. It really needs to be done by qualified healthcare professionals or regulated providers, for example. So it was one thing that concerned us.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I've even seen people that I have on Facebook and social media that aren't even influencers. They're just selling these weight loss injections or they're selling weight loss medication online. And I'm kind of just like, this is really concerning because as an individual who has a bit of a profile, you know, I am qualified, I have my qualifications, I have my insurance, but I'm not qualified to give information out on, for example, medication. So, yeah, I mean, do you feel influencers who aren't qualified and, you know, have these amazing genetics or maybe they've got a BBL, you know, do you think they should be giving advice or do you think the industry needs to be regulated better and people need to be doing better?
I think it's a challenge for the industry as a whole. And even before these medications came on the market, it was trends that we're seeing. I've been in weight management for almost 20 years now and kind of misperceptions, inaccuracies being shared in different platforms by unqualified people. It has always been a challenge. But I think what we found in our survey was that there are more people who are using these medications. So actually one in four people reported that they had been prescribed an obesity management medication in the past year. Mm-hmm. And almost 50% actually know someone, friends, family, colleagues that has. And so I think this big surge in people who are actively using or know someone that's used it also feeds into this challenge around where we get our information. So 27% of people said that actually they get most of their information on these medications from word of mouth. And so those things correlate, that if more people are using it, more people are having experiences, they're talking about it to their family and friends and sharing that information. But certainly one message that we'd want to give to listeners is around making sure that we take these medications seriously. Obesity is a disease. Mm-hmm. It's a medical condition that deserves medical treatment. So number one, that's really important. But people should be going to regulated providers. So, for example, looking for people who are registered with the CQC, which means the Care Quality Commission, which is the independent regulator for health and social care, to make sure that these providers have really strict prescription and eligibility criteria and use legitimate pharmacies, for example. And I think if you're using a provider that isn't regulated, there are a lot of risks associated with that.
No, and I get that. But I like to do a little bit of homework, and I'm obviously seeing more and more people but people struggling with their vision and, you know, going blind from medications. I'm sure there are lots of medications out there that have these sort of kind of healthcare risks. But because there's so many people taking them, you know, that's becoming more and more, and it's coming more to the limelight, really. Like, what are your views on this? Because, like, that's a pretty big thing in my eyes, you know, losing vision. It's one of our senses. It's pretty important.
Well, I think there's, you know, we have to be really careful around interpreting conversations, media coverage. Mm-hmm. Yes, these obesity management medications are prescription-only medications for a reason. So they need to be prescribed by a responsible provider. You need ongoing clinical care to monitor for side effects or any risks. But any prescription medication has side effects and risks. And so making sure that you are eligible for that medication, taking it appropriately, and have the ongoing care is really important. But let's not forget that these medications bring so many benefits to most people. So significant weight loss, but it's not just about the weight loss, significant health benefits. So significant reduction in diabetes risk. Some people going into diabetes remission, reduced risk of some cancers, mm-hmm. reduction in high blood pressure, cholesterol. There are so many positives to taking control of your health and managing your obesity that together with your prescriber or your clinician, you can make that decision on an individual basis. And yes, you know, there are media stories about people who have maybe had some side effects or risks associated with it. But that's why on an individual level, you and your clinician need to make that decision mm-hmm. and monitor yourself carefully along the journey. But there's so many significant benefits that you need to weigh those things up.
No, and I couldn't agree more. You know, I work with clients that have taken it, who are on it, who have not lost anything on it because obviously their metabolism was shot and they were so used to undereating and their body just didn't want to ingest any sort of food. Now, the huge benefits are, it's obvious, it's clear, like you said, you know, there's so much more to it than obviously the few negatives out there. Now, mm-hmm. what impact does the fear of judgment have on people's willingness to seek professional weight loss support? Do you think it's potentially
I mean, our report showed that more people are taking these medications. Fewer people think that taking medications is cheating. More people accept that obesity is a disease. So movement in a great direction, but you're absolutely right that bias and stigma still persists, and it's a huge barrier to care. So 55% of people in this UK population survey felt that they have been judged by their healthcare professional around their weight. Mm-hmm. And actually 40% said that this fear of judgment actually prevents them from seeking help. So this is a significant barrier to access to care. And what I want people to know is that there are people out there that really specialise in obesity science and specialise in obesity programmes. And when you go to those sorts of places, you will never be judged. We know that obesity is a medical condition. It's not about your personal failing. It's not about willpower. This is about treating biology with medical treatments. But you're right, it's a real challenge in our society. And we actually found, we have a whole chapter on weight stigma and bias in this report. And just looking through the literature, we see that weight bias and stigma, actually the prevalence of it is actually the same, if not higher, than the discrimination that people experience around their race and gender. So this is a real problem, not only in our country, but worldwide. And one way, there's many ways that we can tackle this, but one way is continuing to have this discussion, like we are today, around just how biologically based the disease of obesity is, which completely takes out, this old-fashioned idea that obesity is a personal choice and your fault, because it's not.
But do you not choose to eat more food out of pleasure, enjoyment, dopamine release, which in time makes you larger? Because I'm actually, as a health and fitness, professional, I'm a big fan of it if you are on the larger end of the scale, if it is, like you said, going to bring your markers down, if it's going to improve your risk of diabetes, if it's going to improve everything in your life, I'm a big, big fan of it. But I'm not a big fan of it when individuals don't pick up the habits, they don't do any more exercise, and they solely rely on it. And then when, obviously, the GLP-1 agonist is no longer in the body, they go back to their old ways, because that's what a lot of people do. They haven't picked up the habits, they haven't changed their lifestyle, and they are stuck in that rut.
Yes, I mean, certainly we see that when patients have the mindset that they are just going to take the medication and not make any changes to their routines, choices, behaviours, these are the people who are less likely to be successful, not only in the short term, but the long term, but also they're not making steps to do things that are positive for their health and well-being. So we absolutely advocate for a holistic program and not just seeing medications as sort of just something that you're doing on the side without really kind of committing. Mm-hmm. But certainly, when we're talking about obesity, personal responsibility, of course, comes into it. There are things that are within our control and there are things that are outside of our control. So working to, for example, shift your mindset into helpful ways, working to make positive choices around your nutrition and to start or increase activity. These are some of the things that you can do that are within your control. But that doesn't take away from the fact that obesity is largely driven by biology, and that is a really strong element of it. So I'm sure you're aware of the Foresight report many years ago that identified hundreds of influences on an individual's body weight, that includes things like food policy, physical activity environments, are there safe lighting so people can go out walking, through to economics, individual biology, individual psychology. So it really is complex, and this really outdated narrative that actually you're in complete control of what your body weight and shape is super inaccurate. And actually what we found in our report was that between last year and this year, there's been a doubling in the proportion of people who believe that genetics has an influence on obesity. So last year, only 7% of people thought that genetics or biology have any impact on obesity. And now that's 15%. It's still not accurate. But we know that there are hundreds of genes that influence things like how hungry people feel, fat storage, even the pleasure that people get out of food, or how they respond to food in stress responses. So, of course, there's personal responsibility involved, but seeing it as part of this whole complex like medical condition is really important for people to kind of understand. Okay, here's what I can do, here's what I can control, and the behaviours I can change for myself. But actually, I deserve to have medical treatment too, if my obesity, has a strong medical underlying factors.
Okay. And again, I think you say some really, really interesting things. And I know we're going to be short on time. That's the only issue, because I'm sure there's lots that we could go into in depth. Now, the report also shows AI uses weight loss advice. The use of AI, has been used for weight loss advice seems to have doubled. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because of the fear of judgment from health professionals, or do you think it's because it's, you know, you can just jump on the computer and you can go, help me lose weight, and people think that it's going to give them an actual accurate answer?
Yeah, and I think this follows general trends of increased usage and accessibility of AI tools. But as we discussed before, the issue is that these sources often can't be trusted. They're not necessarily the most up-to-date evidence base, and they're certainly not personalized. So the best thing that you can do if you're looking for advice to manage your weight is talk to a healthcare professional on an individual level, because they will understand your medical history, your, you know, social and environmental context, to be able to create a plan that's specific for you. That's what I would advise.
Yeah, amazing. And honestly, Zoe, thank you so much for your time. I know we're running out of time, so I'm just going to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. Where can people find you online if they have any questions? Are there any websites, Instagram, TikTok? I know we spoke about that, but obviously, you know, you are a qualified individual and you're,
yes,
you know,
you're, yeah, thank you're actually you. Reputable. Well, your listeners can go to newman.com, where they can really get into all of the details of the State of Obesity report, or even sort of explore weight management options for them.
Amazing. Well, Zoe, thank you so much for your time. You have a great rest of your day.
Thank
and I'll
you.
Speak to you soon.
You too.
Thank you Bye-bye. So much. Bye-bye. Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'll be joined by Amy Edwards, and we'll be speaking about her amazing weight loss journey.
FUBAR Radio. Politics uncensored.
The more alarming question is, what does this say to victims of these sorts of crimes which have been alleged on them? Essentially, what they'll be looking at is two men who have a huge online influence, who say some of the most disgusting things online and spout off some of the, I think, most dangerous sort of ideas and narratives in the online space, that they've essentially been able to travel to the US while they're still under investigation in multiple countries.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Are you aware of the tea alarm?
Tell me more.
Yeah, so it's this cultural phenomenon that we have in Britain. It's an alarm at 3 p.m. Where everybody in the UK has to have a cup of tea, and if you miss it by a certain number of minutes, you get fined, basically.
This ain't real. This is not real. I'm not playing into this. Yeah. You think me watching Keeping Up Appearances, you think Mrs. Bouquet was missing a 3 o'clock tea alarm? Y'all won't get me.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When I've met people in the past, I'm like, oh yeah, I really love him, he's the one. But I just knew they weren't. I'd say it, but I knew I didn't mean it. But when I met you, there was a different feeling. Like, it's like your gut just tells you. When people used to say, when you know, I was like, oh, piss off. But when you know, you know.
When I met you and times got hard, I would come up with a strategy to make it better.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more with George. This is What The Health.
This is What The Health on FUBAR Radio with me, George Bertineau. Joining me now on the show is Amy Edwards. Amy's journey is nothing short of inspiring. She's a mother of four, and in less than 12 months, she lost 10 stone, which is 140 pounds. £1,000. Amy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. How are you?
No worries. I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. Honestly, we love having individuals like yourself who are inspiring, who have had great journeys, who have got amazing stories to come on and tell people, you know, of how your journey's been.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a bit of a crazy one.
Yes, I have no doubt. So, straight away, can you share your journey with us about your weight loss and what that process looked like from the beginning? You know, how did you do it for any of the listeners?
Yeah, okay. So, I obviously had my four children who I had in under 3 years. And I had a really like risky pregnancy with my last, my last pregnancy was to twins, and it was very risky. And at 3 months postpartum, I was a bridesmaid at my best friend's wedding. And it was just it was obviously a lovely day because she was getting married and I was very happy for her, but I had a bit of a nightmare with my bridesmaid's dress that I had been given, when I was about 6 months pregnant, and I thought I would fit that. Well, I asked for the biggest size that there was, and I got a size 18. But just before, I decided to try it on about 3 weeks before the wedding, and it wouldn't even go over my shoulders. So I had this sort of, I ended up finding a seamstress, and luckily this dress was from ASOS, and I managed to buy the same dress.
Okay.
And this seamstress sewed the two dresses together for me. So I had this sort of, I felt pretty horrible in this dress that was, I knew, it was just, obviously I was just huge. And on the day, I just felt horrible. And I looked at all the pictures of myself afterwards, and I just thought, I was so shocked, and I was like, I've just got to do something. I have got to get healthy. I'm so lucky to have had all my children and they will be healthy. I've got to do this for them. And I threw the dress straight in the bin, and I got straight home that night, and I got my Fitbit out, and I thought, right, I'm going to start calorie counting. I'm going to start eating in a deficit. So I decided I was going to eat in a 1,000 calorie daily deficit. So I ate a different amount of calories every single day, but I made sure that my calories were, the calories that I ate were 1,000 calories at least under that I burnt. Mm-hmm. I was very active anyway, because I had four very young children. So my steps were obviously always up. I started doing the couch to 5K. I have a treadmill in my garage. So that made it very easy. I could just go out and do the run and then come straight back in. And like, because I was feeding my twins, I'd have to feed them. And it just was a juggle. So I started in the March, and by the November, I had lost 10 stone, half my body weight. So I did it in 8 months.
Wow. I mean, that's incredible. Like 10 stone in 8 months. And I was actually speaking to producer Kieran about this before the show, and I was like, that's like super, super aggressive. I'm a big fan of a pound to 2 pounds a week, you know, consistency over long periods of time. There are lots of people's bodies who physically can't lose week in, week out. So obviously, you are in one of the minorities, and that can happen, and it's possible, and you've proved that. But there are people out there who can't. They physically can't. And obviously, 7,700 calories out of your diet via food, exercise, whatever, is going to help you lose a kilo or 2 pounds, you know? And obviously, you've done that for, well, you did it in 8 months, like you said. That's literally life-changing stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it really has. It's completely changed my life. And I think the way I did it, what has now meant it's been completely maintainable, because I've maintained my weight loss for 2 whole years now,
which is amazing.
And I think it really has been an entire mindset change, really. I mean, I can have sugary snacks in the house now, and I won't have to eat them all in one sitting. You can have one or two of a biscuit, whereas before I just couldn't. And that has been a huge game changer for me. I think it's helped my entire family, you know.
Yeah, I have no doubt. And I think the biggest thing you wanted to be, like you said, you went, that was the penny dropping moment, you know, that was the specific moment or the turning point that inspired you to commit to the new lifestyle. That wedding day, your friend's special day where you were part of the, you know, the bride's party and you were excited and you just didn't feel great. You didn't feel happy. And that's the reality for any listener. That is, there has to be a penny dropping moment. Not, oh, I don't like how I look naked, or I don't like, I have to have sex with the lights off. Like, it has to be a moment that in your mind goes, I've got to do this. And like you said, you lost half your weight. You halved. You know, it's just phenomenal stuff, you know. And like you said, for the children and everything like that, it deserves a massive round of applause from not just me, but from everyone that's in your life, because I know people that, you know, they lose 2-3 stone and then they put it all back on because they don't stick to the lifestyle. They don't stick to the change. It's just, I'm going to diet. Dieting doesn't work. That's how all these people that have books make their money, on individuals that diet every 6, 9, 12 months. They just go round and round and round. It's up and down and up and down. So the fact that you've maintained it for 2 years, fantastic.
Thank you. I think on that point, one of the biggest things for me has been having more than just the appearance goal to it, that I've wanted to be healthy for my kids and my family and live as long as I possibly can. And that for me was also the biggest like turning point, because it doesn't really matter how I look like really, but being healthy and living as long as I can for my kids and being a good role model, that's what's important. Yeah. And that then helped me stick to it and still stick to it.
Yeah.
Because as you say, it's a way of life. It's a complete lifestyle change, isn't it?
Isn't it just? Now, what would you say the biggest changes you made to your daily habits that helped you lose weight? Because, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you were, you know, you made a calorie deficit of 1,000 calories a day, but there was probably so much more to that. So let's go from the top.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of food, I plan all my meals in advance, like a week in advance. I stick to them and I make sure they're all really healthy and nutritious. And obviously, when I was in my deficit, within made sure I could stick within my deficit. Mm-hmm. And I mean, one of the biggest things for me was my slow cooker, because you can have healthy food relatively quickly.
Yes, yes.
So that was a huge thing for me. And then sticking to them. So there wasn't a like, oh, I can't be bothered to put this in the slow cooker now. Oh, I'm going to just get a takeaway tonight. No. I was planning my days off or my meals off, because I did think that they were very important to still have. But I wasn't having like a takeaway or two a week. It was maybe one a month. And it was pre-planned. So that was definitely one of the biggest things for me. Obviously, making sure that I had lower cal snack options and healthier snack options available to me when I wanted to, not just grabbing the wrong thing. Yeah. I made sure I did get my steps up, definitely. And obviously planned my exercise in advance and then stuck to it. I obviously spoke to my husband and my family, and they've been really supportive the whole way through, which I'm really lucky about. And they knew how important it was for me to do those sessions. So unless there was an absolute disaster, I always did it.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. It's just being completely committed to yourself that you're going to make this change and not letting yourself fail. One of the biggest things for me was telling myself that I was doing this for my kids, mm-hmm. because it meant if I didn't do it, I was letting them down. So if I didn't want to go out or get up at 4 a.m. to do a training session, then that's just me being lazy and not being a good mum, because I need to show them that I'm going to go and achieve this and do this. And that obviously helped me massively as well in achieving what I have achieved from the weight loss and then afterwards, really.
You bring a better version of yourself to the family as well. So I always say this is, you know, the weight loss journey isn't just about physical, mental, emotional, all of the above. It's also about how you turn up for the people that you truly love and that you want to be around for as long as possible. Okay. Yes, I always use Ozzy Osbourne and Hulk Hogan as two individuals, polar opposite lifestyles. They lived to a very good age. One was, you know, whatever he did, party, drink, X, Y, Z. The other one was apparently the epitome of health and fitness. But actually, you know, you can improve your lifestyle and give yourself a better chance of longevity. And that's exactly what you've done. You've done it for the people that you love and the people around you that matter the most. And then they now get a better, more vibrant, more amazing version of yourself. You've grown and you've, you know, improved your lifestyle as well as, I'm sure, home life. I'm sure home life is better as well.
Exactly. I mean, a background to my story is I suffered massively with my mental health, and exercise has been one of the biggest things for me in helping to maintain my mental well-being and feel well and be the mum I want to be. Mm-hmm. And obviously improve my mood massively. My mental health was awful in my late teens, early 20s. I'm actually a suicide survivor. And exercise has just been the biggest turning point for that, for me. And I think that also brought into it has helped with my family life as well, the exercise, not just my weight loss, but obviously helped me with my mental well-being at home. As I say, make me the mum I want and need to be, and wife to my husband. Oh, so, of course.
Truly, truly, truly inspiring. Which also leads me on to the next part of your journey. So you now compete in Ironman events, marathons. You know, did you ever imagine yourself to, you know, be doing this as part of your life when you first started? Or did you just think, oh, I'm going to set myself a challenge and I'll just go with it?
Well, the Ironman has always been like a dream to me, like a huge, my dad did them. And I just thought he was like superhuman and amazing. I obviously watched him train for them and I went to go and watch him. Mm-hmm. And obviously when I was suffering with my mental health, I just thought, no one like me could ever do this. I'm not worthy of even trying. And I actually did the London Marathon in 2016 before I had children. And it was part of like my mental health recovery. And I ran it for Mind. So before I started my weight loss journey, I did have some sort of, I'd done the marathon once, but I wouldn't say I did it to get round it and I did it to raise money. I wouldn't have said I was an athlete. I didn't do it in like really, really fast or anything. And then after I turned obviously a mum and then I started my weight loss journey, no, I just never, ever would have thought that like 2 years later, I'd be an Ironman. Like it was just, it's mind blowing even now. I still can't really believe it. When I look at the pictures of the Ironman finish in the beginning of October, I still can't believe I did it. I think it's taken a lot of work and a lot of dedication, a lot of early rising. It's obviously possible. If you want to do it, you can do it.
Power of the mind, right? Anything's possible. It's kind of, you know, yes, things can physically block you, but I think, you know, you're a prime example of power of the mind, believing in yourself and just showing strength of character, right?
Well, I hope so, and that's something that I hope my kids will see and understand more as they get older, really.
I have no doubt. Now, what does your training routine look like today? You know, how's it evolved over time? You've gone from, you know, having your treadmill in your garage and now you're doing Ironmans, and you know, how's it evolved?
I guess it's gone to doing the couch to 5K, just in on the treadmill three times a week, to now I train I'm now doing 5 days a week, but in the Ironman heat, I train 6 days a week, and that will start again in January because I've signed up for Ironman Wales next year. I can't just leave the Ironman at one, but now I get up. My husband works shifts, So I have to juggle a lot of my shorter sessions before he goes to work. He starts work at 7 and he has to leave her at 6. So I'll have to get up about 4 a.m. to get on my bike. I have a turbo trainer in my garage for the winter months on my bike. So I'll do 2 bikes a week. Runs, I do a shorter run, or a couple of shorter runs, a long run. I try and save that for when my husband's on a day off to look after the kids. Swim sessions. My pool luckily opens at 5 in the morning, so I can go early. Some sessions I leave until the kids are in bed and I go out at like 8 p.m. I've had to, in the summer, when I was in the heat of my heavy part of my long bikes and I was having to ride my bike for the longest one, it was about 5.5 hours. I made sure those were when my husband was on his days off or my mum was able to come up here to look after the kids for me. But it really has. I have to train, obviously, a lot more now. But I try to make sure that as many of those sessions are out of like kids' time, and do them early or late, or especially when my big girls are at school. It is a dedication, but then I just know that the feeling I get, I have got on the finish line, and I hope to prove to my kids that like all their dreams, if they want to achieve something, it's completely possible. If you really put your mind into it and promise yourself that you're going to commit to it.
No, I love it. I absolutely love it. So going on from what you said, what advice would you offer to someone who's ready to make a change but doesn't know where to start?
My biggest advice would be, well, to just start and don't put it off. I would, if it's in terms of weight loss, I would just start counting your calories and having some awareness of how many you're actually eating. So I think people don't really realize that something you can eat easily quite a lot of calories without realizing it. And start weighing, I guess, things like butter and things, especially. And then, yeah, whether you want to do it like me or whether you want to do an online calculator and start eating in a deficit, that would, I think the calorie counting is 100% the way forward, because I think it shows then you can eat everything and all your favorites in moderation.
Balance, yeah.
And it makes it much more, you can stick to it then, not cutting anything out. And start getting your steps up 100% and start exercising, but do an exercise you actually enjoy, because you're not going to stick to it if you don't like it.
Yeah. You know what's so nice is you say so many things that I tell all my clients, and I just say, just find something you enjoy. You know, you don't want to do weight training? Great. There are amazing benefits to it. But if you're not going to enjoy it, why are you going to do it? Why don't you play a racket sport? Oh, I don't like racket sports. Why don't you play a team sport? I don't like team sports. Okay. Do you like running? No. But I do like skipping. Great. If you like it, do it. You know, steps is a huge one. People have no idea. Just not even doubling, unless you're doing 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 steps. You know, maybe doubling is great. But just adding 2,000 steps to your week or 3,000 extra steps a day is 14,000 to 21,000 steps, which in itself is anywhere between, you know, like 5 to 750 calories, which in itself is a day of a deficit, depending on what you want to do. If it's a pound, if it's 2 pounds, if it's half a kilo. So it all adds up, and it's all lots of mathematics, really. But yeah, sorry, I might have interrupted you. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, but that's it. The steps is definitely a massive one. It really is. I think because I've been so active with the kids, I've been really lucky in that. I don't have a job, a desk job, you know.
Yes.
I think that is a big thing, to make sure you get your steps in wherever you can.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree. Now, was there a piece of advice or maybe mindset shift that made you feel the biggest difference in your success?
I think the biggest thing really was realizing that I'd become so unhealthy and risking my life expectancy, really. And I think then becoming a mum made me then feel like I I can't, it's not just myself that I'm doing this for, but I also have to do this for my kids. I know I've mentioned it before, but definitely doing this for them, but also for the goal of it not just being for weight loss and appearance.
Yeah, of course.
Again, that's definitely one of the biggest things for me, 100%.
And last two questions, okay? Are there any misconceptions about weight loss or fitness that you wish people understood more, that you hear of, and obviously throughout your journey you heard lots of?
I think people think that it can, and I guess with me, look like a really quick fix. And it definitely wasn't. It's hard work. It definitely is. And a big change like that doesn't just come overnight. You do have to put the work in, and I think to maintain it. And there's definitely we could go in for a long, there's a lot of talk obviously about the jabs now. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I'm not particularly open about. I have an Instagram account, 4 Under 3 Marathon Mum. And I'm not particularly open about it on Instagram because I worry about how reactions to it. But it's not something that I am supportive of at all, because I feel like it doesn't change your mindset. And I think the biggest part to maintaining any weight loss is changing your mindset. Yeah. And you can't, no injection's going to do that. No, there's exactly. A huge mental aspect to this. It's not just simply reducing your calories. Even you have to know that it's a complete mental change,
yes,
isn't it?
It is.
So that's probably my biggest thing.
Okay, it's really funny because we just had a lady on before who did a survey on weight loss injections. She's a weight loss management individual, super insightful, super knowledgeable, and she was saying how obesity is a biological thing. And I was like, that's great, but in my eyes, you don't get larger from air or water. You get it from too many calories, you know. And I also mentioned that I do think they have a place. I do. I sit in the middle of probably both of you. I think if you are morbidly obese and you are having terrible health markers and you are having problems, you can't walk, you can't do this, you can't do that, you're struggling to breathe, sleep apnea, all of those nasties that could come your way from being morbidly obese, yes, they serve a purpose. I train clients that take weight loss injections but also want to learn the habits and pick everything up. And as they go through their journey with me, we taper off the amount they take. I just say you need to reduce the amount. Obviously, I'm no medical professional with the injection, but they want to take it. I can't tell them what they can and can't do with that, but I can help them with the mindset, the lifestyle, and the body. So, you know, I totally agree with you, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. When people are very severely and they obese and they really do need them initially. But then, as you say, changing the mindset alongside it is so important. Yeah. And I think that's definitely what's missed by a lot of people, which is why they then go back and put all the weight back on.
There's a good old study at the moment that I've seen. It's like, I think it's 70% of people within a year of stopping the injections put all the weight back on. And I think it's 100% of people within 5 years of stopping or still being on it puts the weight back on. That's crazy.
It's crazy, and it's so sad, and it's so worrying for what their bodies go through with that as well. Yo-yoing effect.
Yeah, but again, I always say to people, you know, take what you want, but just, you have to understand that it's all about doing enough. You know, I actually put clients on super high food and they're like, oh, I've never realized I'm allowed so much food. And I'm like, yeah, because, you know, metabolic adaptation, all that. Anyway, we're going to run out of time. So I'm just going to have to say a massive thank you to you. Super inspiring. Where can people find you online? You mentioned Four Under Three Marathon Mum on Instagram.
Yeah, 4 Under 3 Marathon Mum on Instagram
and TikTok. Do you have a website? Anything else?
I have TikTok, but it's very little. My main account is Instagram, but my website is www.4under3marathonmum.com.
Amazing. Amy, super inspiring. Thank you so much. You have a great rest of your day, and I'm sure we'll speak soon.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having
Thanks
me
so
on.
Much. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'll be answering your listener questions.
FUBAR Radio.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
So we've got Dr. Matt Morgan. Someone's heart stopped beating for 8 hours.
So he was stuck on a ledge in a freezing snowstorm, and his heart stopped for an amazing 9 hours. He's still the world's longest surviving cardiac arrest patient. And he lived because he was cold. You know, there's a saying, you're not dead until you're warm and dead.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yeah. The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
If you drink a little, then drive, you risk losing your licence. You risk every day becoming more complicated.
How am I supposed to get to training, Dad? How am I supposed to...
You risk losing your job.
I'm going to have to let you go. I'm going to have to let you go.
You risk your family not looking at you the same way.
I can't believe you did that.
You risk injuring someone.
Hello, I need an ambulance.
You risk being seen as a drink driver. Drink a little, risk a lot. Think.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Let's go back to the beginning. A mortgage advisor. What does a mortgage advisor do?
So, the main purpose of a mortgage advisor is to help you to achieve the best possible mortgage solution on time and first time. Typically, in the modern day, it's somebody who's going to hold your hand through the full home buying process, liaising with solicitors, estate agents, helping with insurance, and yeah, being in your corner on your team to make sure you achieve that goal.
With Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I want to find happiness and I need him to be kind.
What the Hell with Georges Bertineau, exclusively on FUBAR Radio.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. Now, time for some listener questions. As always, guys, if you want to get involved, you can message us at What the Health Show on Instagram or at Georges Bert on Instagram. Right, first question is, I'm trying to lose fat without feeling hungry all the time. How do I know if I'm eating too little or too much for my goals? This is actually maybe one of the best questions we've had in a little while. So there's a couple of things you can do. You can go online and you can type in calorie calculator or TDEE calculator. This is going to give you the breakdown of how many calories you need depending on your height, weight, age, and gender, because gender plays a huge part, so does height. Anyone below probably, I would say 5'4", 5'3", I'm sorry, but that is a real-life debuff. That means that you are just genuinely allowed so fewer calories compared to someone who's taller. So you need to do that, and then you need to play around with your food. So log it, track it, measure it, do all of the above, and look at foods that fill you up. So that's high volume of food. You need to look at the satiety index. That is, white potato is in a league of its own. It's like the most filling food on the planet, followed by white fish. If you want snacks, popcorn is up there. We were speaking about that before with producer Kieran. Yeah, just voluminous food. Look at volume versus calorie conversion, okay? So a bar of chocolate, a large one, 1,100 calories, or two whole meals of potato, fish, veg, and chicken, potato, and veg. Just because it's a potato doesn't mean you can't cut it into a French fries shape. And you can put it in the air fryer. And you can use fry light, salt, pepper, Cajun, paprika, anything, chili flakes, whatever. Give it flavor. Meals don't have to be boring. I fed my friend the other day a Chipotle steak potato bowl. And he was like, oh, wow, what's this? And I went, it's 550 calories, my friend, 45 grams of protein, and you're full. And he went, that was so tasty. I was like, I didn't realize meal prep could be so tasty. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the penny dropping moment. It doesn't have to be boring chicken, broccoli and rice. It does if you are going on stage. It does if you want to guarantee results. But actually, something that's got a little bit more flavor, makes you happy, gives you joy, and it fills your cup. So hopefully that helps. Calorie calculator, TDEE calculator, which is total daily energy expenditure. And then play around with foods. Go high food, low food, see how that works. Next question. I've been lifting for a year, but my progress has plateaued. How do I know when it's time to change my training program? I would say 6 to 10 weeks. Well, technically 4, but depends what you do. So for an everyday individual, I would say 6 to 10, maybe 12 at a push, weeks between changing up your program. You need a deload week at the end, which is a week where you do half the amount, half the weight, just go through the reps, do the movement, feel good, recover. And then the first 2 weeks needs to be building into your session and building into your training block. Okay. If you don't do that, you are probably not going to get the best results. You are going to struggle. You're not going to enjoy it as much. You're going to feel tired. Your tendons are going to hurt. All of the above. So that's my biggest advice. Change your program. Find a coach. There are coaching programs that are like $29.99 a month where they do your programming and your food. So, you know, that's something super affordable. It's £1 a day, right? Or less than £1 a day. Depending on which month of the year, obviously. Next question. How can I tell the difference between normal workout fatigue and early signs of burnout or overtraining? Oh, this is actually a pretty complex question. So workout fatigue is going to be signs of cramping, signs of, you know, muscular fatigue, your muscles sore, they hurt for more than kind of like 2 days. You know, this also comes down to food as well. So if you're in a calorie deficit, you're naturally going to feel more tired sooner. You're going to be fatigued. Your energy levels are going to be lower. Your strength is going to go down. All of those things are huge factors when it comes to workout fatigue. So I would say, linking the last question with this one, early signs of burnout or overtraining is 100% down to you not having a fresh program. It's 100% down to you being in a calorie deficit for too long. Technically, you should probably only be in a calorie deficit for about 12 weeks because then you get diet fatigue. It's a known fact. Some people can power through. Some people can do it for long periods of time. Depends what your true goal is. But as an everyday person who struggles to stick to things, 12 weeks is probably a really, really good aim. And then doing like 2 weeks, maybe even 3 of maintenance, eating normal food, less meal prep, blah, 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 blah. And then you go back into it because then all of a sudden your adherence goes up. And if your adherence goes up, guess what? The next 3 months or the next 12 weeks or the next 16 weeks is going to feel easier than if you're in month 6, 7 or 8 and you're like, oh my Lord, I've got to do this again. Another week of no food. Well, that's where you're going wrong because you need food. And food is good for us, especially balance, people. Balance. Right, last question, if we've got a little bit of time. I'm juggling work, family and fitness. What are some realistic strategies to stay consistent without feeling overwhelmed? Plan, plan, plan. Plan your meals, buy a slow cooker, have an air fryer, bulk cook meals, potatoes, fish, eat that within 2 days, chicken, all of the above. Okay? And guys, that is it from me. A massive thank you to our guests, Zoe and Amy, for joining us on What the Health Today. Amazing and inspiring conversations. A reminder, you can download the app and listen each week, and you can follow us on social media. We are at What the Health Show on Instagram. If you want help with your health and fitness goals, I provide a top-tier coaching service with no BS, problem-solving, and I'll hold your hand every step of the way. You can contact me at Georges Bert on Instagram. Also, the show will be available to listen back to on all good podcasting platforms. A massive, massive thank you to producer Kieran for producing the show. We love you lots. I'll be back next week at 11 a.m. I'm Georges. Love you. Bye.